You know, this is one of my favorite conversations of the year, so let's get right to it. If you're on hold, stay there. Right now, we are joined by the owner of one of the finest resumes in sports, except it all boils down to one thing. San Quentin Hoops legend. I am joined by Bob Myers. Bob, it's great to have you back. How are you?
Good, man. How are you?
Good, good. Bob, I have to start with this. I understand from a very good source that you were not able to participate in the annual San Quentin Hoops game this year. How is your hip these days?
Jim, I'm glad we're leading off with the important stuff. The hip is not ready yet. I'm doing some spot shooting. You know, have you seen those guns that they have at the where they kick the ball back out to you?
Yes.
So I shot 100 shots, and I made 38, which, you know, we don't have to take a genius. That's 38%, which is pretty much, you know, the percentage I live at. So my shot is still there, but my conditioning and my ability to move is not there. So if I did go to San Quentin, it's not the place you want to start your comeback. It's not a good place for that. So I couldn't make it this year. We lost. I still have to go back and avenge that. The crazy thing is, in a life way, not in a basketball way, there's a San Quentin community, so I'm running into more and more people that are actually getting out, which I just never thought I'd have a network of people that were in San Quentin. You know, like I said, I grew up in a non-San Quentin-like place, so it's a part of my life that's fascinating to me even. It's just, like I said, when I get back out there, you're coming with me.
No, I know, and I appreciate that very much, Bob. I know it's tough for you to miss that game, but you got to take care of you first, and I know you will, and then you'll be back, and I got to get out there. I know it. At some point, I got to get out there. Bob Myers joining us. Now, Bob, something really interesting happened. Sports Illustrated named the Warriors the Sports Person of the Year this morning. It is the 65th Sports Person of the Year award, but only the fourth time that a team has been named the winner. What does the honor mean to you?
Man, you know, that's something you grow up as a kid, seeing who won the sports, you know, Sports Illustrated Person of the Year, and it's a pretty decorated list. But to get it from a team standpoint, it's fitting, really, is what it is, because the more you're around, whether it's our team, I think, or any business or sports, it's never one person that does it. And I know that we live kind of in a society where we want to anoint, you know, the star of the movie was the whole movie. Well, there's a lot of people that make a movie, and there's a lot of people that make a team. So to see our entire team get to celebrate it together and get recognized together, and not just the players but the coaches, ownership, everybody that's involved in making the Warriors what they are, it's a cool thing. And that's kind of what we try to embody here, is that it's not one person, it's a collection of people. But it's going to be fun. It's hard to put into words. I actually haven't. Chris Ballard's an amazing writer. He wrote the piece on it. I was trying to. It's a long story, so I haven't even finished reading it myself.
Bob Myers joining us. He's an excellent, excellent writer. Let me read you a quote from this. Ballard writes, quote, "For sustained excellence, business innovation, and cultural impact, for injecting joy into the game and setting fire to conventional wisdom, for winning with a center built like a forward, a point guard built like a featherweight, and an offense predicated on the idea that the stars want nothing more than to pass the ball to someone who will pass the ball to someone else who might shoot it from 27 feet, for thinking the game and speaking out," end quote. I mean, I could go on, but I'll stop right there. Of all the things I just mentioned, is there any one aspect that makes you more proud than the others?
You know what? I mean, I think it says it in there, Jim, but actually, and that you're gonna follow this up with a question, I know, but it's actually getting along, to be honest. In this day and age, with the scrutiny, with the attention that's put upon players, they're almost brands in themselves, a lot of these players, and they deserve that. I mean, that's something that's evolved for them, and it's a powerful thing. So in a team-like environment where it takes more than one person to actually succeed and enjoy the success of a teammate. My favorite, by far, moments when I watch our team is when they celebrate for each other, when you'll watch the players on the bench get excited for their teammates. That's by far the most joy I get when I watch us, is to see their reaction to someone else's success. And I think that is the challenge. That is the fragility of any team, any organization, to recognize, and John, like I've used this quote many times, but John Wooden, and I went to UCLA, had a great quote. It's amazing what you can accomplish when no one cares who gets the credit. It's such a simple thing to say, But it's so hard to do. We're so caught up in, well, you know, this guy is the one that, the reason they won the game. And to kind of push all that aside and say we are winning together and we are losing together, the challenge of keeping that mindset, and Steve Kerr does a fantastic job of it, as do our players, that's the real hard part. It may look easy, but to keep it all strung together is the fascinating and I think most challenging part of all of it.
Bob Myers joining us. You know, Bob, when you say that, I think Steph Curry put it another way. One of the things that he said was the goal is to overcome human nature, which is obviously a profound challenge. And I think that's what you're talking about, at least in part. So then you see that moment earlier this season where Kevin Durant and Draymond Green got into it. What did you think when you saw that? I mean, was that human nature popping up?
Yeah, you know, it is. And that's probably a fair way of saying it. It's that you live in close quarters. And you have different personalities, you have different emotions, you have different ways of going about things. So when you see something like that, to me, I see, and it, honestly, they're probably, as far as how people get along, they're two of the closest people on the team. They really genuinely are. They come from similar backgrounds, you know, not the easiest places. They made it through a lot. They had to get through a gauntlet to get to the NBA. And so they share that experience. So they're just made up differently. This is a guy that wears everything in Draymond, just unbridled emotion, good and bad. He unchecked, and that's how he's lived his whole life. And a week or so after, Draymond and I talked to him, and I think for people to really understand him, they need to understand for him, he hates to lose so much. And Jim, you've covered sports all the time, and you've interviewed hundreds of thousands of people. There's a few people that literally can't stand losing so much that it makes them sometimes difficult. That you can list a long list of guys. And the thing that they all have in common is they usually win. They're usually winners. Now, sometimes those people are hard because they're the people that when they lose the Monopoly game, you know, it's on Friday night, they flip it over and throw it.
Right.
And you go, come on, man, it's just Monopoly. But they can't. That's how Draymond's made up, and that's how he's had to be his whole life. He's not a 7-foot, you know, power forward. He's been undersized. He's been scrappy and clawing. And then you've got Kevin, who's got all this natural ability and is as competitive as Draymond, but doesn't showcase it in the same way. So you've got two people that want the same thing. They just go about it differently. So yeah, it's all part of the human nature of any relationship. And I always tell people, as much as people might want to say differently, there's a healthiness in saying whatever you have to say in any relationship and getting it out and then moving on, because I more worry about when people don't talk and don't say anything, because inevitably on a team, in a friendship, in a family, in any relationship, there's times where it's hard. So get that out and move past it. And I honestly think we're beyond it now, and I think it'll be something that does make us stronger. I really believe that.
Bob Myers joining us for a few more moments. Bob, I want to get you to go back to Steph Curry for a minute, because Steve Kerr said that SI should just give the award to Steph Curry and call him, and called him a short Tim Duncan. That was a quote. You know, when you look at Steph Curry, if you were to build a basketball player from scratch who would completely alter the way the game of basketball is played, Steph might not be the guy you'd come up with physically. So how do you explain how he has completely changed how the entire NBA plays basketball?
Well, you know what? He has to do what he's done, Jim, and to, you know, you compare him to people that have kind of shifted or evolved their sport. You have to be bold, you have to be brash, you have to be willing to kind of challenge the norm. And with his shot, simply his shot, he's changed it. His ability to shoot and take shots and make the three-pointer, what used to be a mid-range shot, is now a three-point shot. He's a huge reason for that. And what that's done is, and you look now at the game, the space to operate has become so much bigger, because if you play basketball, you realize you didn't really usually have to guard your guy 30 feet from the basket. You really didn't have to do that. But all of a sudden, you're playing against this guy who shoots that shot like it's a jump shot at the free throw line and makes it. And then all of a sudden, you say, well, hang on a sec. Do I have to guard this guy out here? And it's worth 1.5 times, three-pointers worth 1.5 times as a two. So I really got to get out there. And if you play basketball or you watch it, you've been around it, it's not comfortable. being that far away from what you're trying to protect in a very simple way is the basket. That's what they teach you in your second grade. Protect the basket. Stay between your man and the basket. All of a sudden, you're 35 feet from the basket, and you got a guy that's shooting a shot, making it, and that's uncomfortable. And to see him go through that evolution in the way that he did, and was almost, there was a subtlety to it, where all of a sudden, and for me it was a moment 3-4 years ago where I looked at the box score, and I think he'd taken 12 three-pointers or something like that. And nobody in the media, nobody on our team, nobody thought that was a big deal at all. And then you knew, for me, immediately I thought, you know what, he's arrived. Like this game, him, the NBA, is changing. It has changed now where you look back at the 90s, the 80s, and 80s, nobody was taking 12. Teams were taking 12 three-pointers a game, not one person. So for him to all of a sudden be there, and you know you've arrived when nobody's talking about it anymore. So it was almost like what he was able to do in a very Steph-like, subtle way. All of a sudden you woke up one day and you go, teams are shooting. This guy, Steph shot 15 threes in the game last night, or he made 9, no big deal. Or a team is shooting 40. Did he do it all by himself? No. There's a lot of coaches that were involved in that process, but hats off to him. I mean, you wouldn't want a better ambassador to carry that torch of kind of being in the history of the game. When they look back on him, he'll get great credit for this three-point evolution, and he deserves to.
Bob Myers, my guest. Bob, one more thing, and I could talk to you for an hour, but, you know, you're always going to avoid taking credit. Steve Kerr is always going to avoid credit. Rick Welts is always going to avoid taking credit. But there was a moment back in 2016 after that Game 7 loss to the Cavs when you and Kerr met up right after the game. Generally, how does a conversation between a GM and a coach go in a situation like that? And then how did it actually go between you and Steve?
Well, when you lose, I hope anybody that's in professional sports or strives to be losing a Game 7, oh, man, you talk about, like, a rawness to that. Luckily, we'd won. I can't imagine going through, like, what the Buffalo Bills, you know, losing in a Super Bowl. And at least we had a championship when we lost that one. But first, in these moments, Jim, in the hardest moments of your life or mine, we usually show the worst of ourselves. I'm not talking hard like tragedy. I'm talking like a professional thing that happens to you that is really tough, unfair, you know, it hurts. Usually you lash out at other people around you because it feels better, just feels better. And then you apologize, I shouldn't have done that. So it takes a lot of restraint in that moment to just accept losing, right? There's a way to go through winning graciously, and we don't teach enough people, how do you lose? How do you fail? Like, what do you do when you fail? You failed, I failed. To get to where you are in your career, you failed, right? So what? But how did you handle that failure? So losing the Game 7, you immediately feel like I failed and I'm mad. I'm pissed. So who do I blame? Who do I get mad at? So I will tell you, and this isn't to be critical of coach-GM relationships, it's easier. There's a couple things that this usually would go. You don't even want to talk to your coach because it's easier to blame him for whatever. He probably doesn't want to talk to you. Maybe he's blaming you. The coach is blaming the GM for something. So most of the time, you don't even, after a game like that, you're probably going in the other direction because you know I'm going to say something I shouldn't say. So what happened was you check yourself first because, yeah, you have to acknowledge this sucks, right? That's the first part of it. This sucks. So then I went back in the locker room. But here's what you have to get over. It sucks for everybody. It doesn't just suck for me. It sucks for our players. It sucks for our fans. It sucks for our owners, our coaches. So I went in the locker room, and before I just sat there, right? Sometimes there are no words. Sometimes you just sit down next to somebody that is in the same kind of pain you are, and you just sit there. There's nothing to say. You just lost Game 7. Like, what are words going to do? And Steve says, you know, there's some things before I could say anything, he said, I should have done a couple things differently. And I said, first of all, for him to self, you know, be that self-aware, and by the way, so does every – even when you win, you could have done different – coaches make hundreds of decisions. They're not going to all be perfect in any game. And I said, yeah, but I said, I didn't – you know, I could have given you a roster that made it a little easier for you. And those were heartfelt things. I felt that. I was kind of putting it back on me. He was kind of putting it back on him. And the beauty in that is, as a leader in any organization, this is what you lead for. This is why you're paid to lead. This is why you have the role you have, is to take on that And then when you win, it's also to defer and deflect and say, because of this player, that player. But when you lose, that's when you got to own it as a leader. And so that's where Steve is so good, in that before I can even, not that I would have, he just takes it on himself. Mm-hmm. And when you have that in a coach-GM relationship, it can really flip. Then the relationship can last, Jim, because these things are hard to sustain. But when you have that type of dynamic and that type of human being like Steve, it allows the friendship, the relationship, to one, be fun, and two, to last a long time. So that's the uniqueness of a guy like Steve and our team. And I know we got to go, but the next morning I meet with all the players after we lost Game 7, 12 hours later, and I kept waiting for Steph to blame somebody or Clay to blame Draymond for being suspended or Draymond to blame one of those guys for not shooting well enough or somebody to blame somebody. And I tell you, nobody did. And it was just them and I in a room. It would have been the perfect time to blame someone else. And I knew then, and I've told this story, I knew that in that moment that we were going to do some good things because I saw how we handled adversity.
Bob Myers, GM and president of basketball ops for the Golden State Warriors. Sports Illustrated has named the Warriors the sports person of the year this morning. Bob, we never have enough time. I can't say that I've ever appreciated you more than I do right now. What a great conversation that was. I'm sorry that you didn't make the trip to San Quentin. However, I know you will bounce back. You always do. I know I owe you that trip as well. What can I say, Bob? You are such a good friend of the program. I really appreciate you. Congrats on the award.
Anytime you want tickets, too.
You got it.
Sit with me, though. I want to hear your basketball thoughts.
Yeah, I probably won't be doing that. Better that I don't expose myself, right? Bob Myers, I'll take you up on it. You know I will. Bob Myers, Bob, thanks so much. Really good to have you back.
Thanks, Jim.
Yeah, how would you like to be me and sit at a game with Bob Myers, quote, so he can hear my basketball knowledge? I think I'd rather run in the game in San Quentin. I'd rather play point guard. It's an amazing conversation. My thanks to Bob Myers. And again, if we're talking Golden State basketball and Bob Myers is coming on, I want to be sure that I thank the amazing PR staff of Golden State. Brett Winkler, Michael Ravina, Cole Lawrence, Daryl Arata, and of course the icon, the legend, the GOAT, the best there has ever been in any sport, Raymond Ritter.